the Cabinet today, there's a number of matters which are relevant to electricity governance and regulation. We've agreed to draft a national policy statement under the RMA on renewable electricity generation. Also on electricity, you recall last year, following a death which followed a disconnection of electricity, the government invited the Electricity Commission to draw up new guidelines around disconnection of supply, with particular reference to protecting vulnerable consumers. The Electricity Commission is reporting to us on compliance with the new guidelines, and the good news is that disconnections have dropped away quite sharply, from around 5,000 to 6,000 a month to somewhere more in the vicinity of 1,000 to 2,000 on average since the October period. So clearly the approach we took through the guidelines has had an effect. The retailers are complying, I would say quite enthusiastically, and we said we don't see any need for further regulation at this time. We will also be issuing the updated government policy statement on electricity governance. That takes into account the fact there's now a fully promulgated New Zealand Energy Strategy and New Zealand Energy Efficiency and Conservation Strategy. It also takes into account that the Electricity Commission had reviewed the electricity security of supply situation and other changes which have taken place since the last government policy statement was issued. There's also been some work done to clarify the allocation of responsibilities for implementing the New Zealand Energy Efficiency and Conservation Strategy between the Electricity Commission and the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Agency, EECA. Also agreed today to changes to the building code, which will require domestic hot water systems to be installed energy efficient, and there'll be more said on that by the Minister of Building and Construction. This follows public consultation which was launched last year and feedback on that. There is a discussion paper to come out on a proposed national environmental standard for ecological flows and water levels, important statement around water. That's to be issued by Trevor Mallard. New bills. There is a Commerce Amendment Bill ready for introduction. This is a major review. Those of you who follow these issues will know that Leanne Dalziel, as Minister of Commerce, and her officials have been reviewing Part 4A of the Act. And this has implications for information disclosure by energy lines companies and also for disclosure by the three major international airports in New Zealand. There's also a unit titles bill ready for introduction. This is a rewrite of the 1972 Act. We've agreed to government responses on a number of select committee reports on victims' rights, on soy-based infant formula, and on breast cancer risk reduction strategy. They'll be tabled this week. And also ready for release following a lot of consultation with the sector from the Ministers of Education and Health is the new New Zealand Autism Spectrum Disorder Guideline. This is eagerly awaited by the sector. We haven't had such a statement before. An update on the drought, which we get every week. There has been some good news, particularly in the South Island, which has had valuable and timely rain, but the affected areas of the North Island still face considerable difficulties. In Wairarapa, we're told that the situation is assessed as serious and deteriorating. The Waikato remains of high concern. Southern Hawke's Bay is deteriorating. Southern Taranaki is very short of feed and so on. So we're not out of the woods yet on drought, particularly in the North Island and a small number of South Island areas. We have had a preliminary discussion about the issue which has been labelled body snatching or removal of bodies, and the Ministry of Justice is considering now whether there should be legislative amendment to clarify and strengthen the law. The gist of it is that there is by common law no property in a dead human body, but the executor of the deceased person is entitled to the custody of the body and has a legal duty to bury, cremate, or otherwise dispose of the body. The manner of burial is at the discretion of the executor, although in practice the executor will normally observe the wishes of the immediate family. But the problem is with enforcement, especially given the charged circumstances in which these issues tend to arise. So the Ministry of Justice will be advising Annette King on whether legislative amendment would help. That would include looking at the powers available to police when a body is taken and what the situation might be when someone dies intestate. And the police are looking at whether any changes are needed to their procedures and protocols for dealing with situations where a body is taken. Obviously, it's a complex issue. Because there is deemed in law to be no property in a human body, someone cannot be charged with theft. On the other hand, the taking of the casket could be deemed as theft, and there's also the possibility of an offence being committed of offering an indignity to a dead human body. So we are carefully going into those issues. We are also expecting to discuss again this week the situation of the elderly people in Christchurch who have been left in a most unfortunate position after the financial problems of the owner of the retirement village that they were in, but we don't have enough information yet to say more about what the options are. Coming up in the House this week, we expect to continue the committee stage of the Building Amendment Bill, progress the Misuse of Drugs Classification of BZP Bill to third reading, and also the Limited Partnerships Bill to third reading. The Broadcasting Amendment Bill may also get a third reading, and the Statutes Amendment Bill, second reading, and possibly committee stages. Apart from private, local, and members' bills on Wednesday, there will also be the two-hour debate on the Budget Policy Statement 2008, and that replaces the general debate. Otherwise, coming up this week, on Thursday and Friday, there will be the final stages of a major civil defence exercise which has been running in Auckland on the possibility of a volcanic eruption. It's described as the largest ever national disaster exercise ever held in New Zealand. There will be some involvement, I understand, of ministers at some point during this week, but it's quite a major undertaking by local councils in the Auckland area, working closely with government agencies. We're also expecting to issue this week the evaluation report, which has been done on KiwiSaver. Clearly there's been huge uptake of the scheme, and we'll be able to put out more information on who's taking it up, what the characteristics of those signing up actually are. Coming up tomorrow, there will be a major announcement made about a government innovation initiative. I expect on Wednesday that we will release to the Select Committee and the media the work that was done by the House Prices Unit, which led to announcements that were made in the Prime Minister's statement from me in February on housing affordability. It's ongoing work on that. And also of interest, Marion Street herself will be in Australia at the end of the week for a Housing Ministers' Conference, and she will be visiting in Melbourne the Urban Development Authority there. And we have had officials looking very closely at that model for increasing affordable housing supply in New Zealand. Later in the week, I'll be in the South Island at the opening of yet another part of Te Araroa, the national walkway system, and with an announcement in Dunedin around museum funding. And come the weekend, the Labour Party list conference will be held in Auckland. They've been going on in other parts of the country over this last weekend as well. Any questions?
So what was that major announcement you said you wanted?
On innovation.
What will be the focus of that?
Well, all will be revealed tomorrow, but I have been consistently saying this year that I see this election as a contest about who has the best plan for the future, and this is very much about planning for the future.
Sometimes governments have been trying to move the economy away from commodity based to certain value added, like more sophisticated products, if you like. Is that the sort of track to go
on? It's correct that that's been very much a focus of ours, to shift to more sophisticated, higher value production. A lot of change has been made in the primary sectors and other sectors, but we still need some quantum leaps. So we're very much focusing on innovation as a driver of the economy going forward.
Prime Minister, how will you approach the issue of visa free entry to the UK when you meet with
Brownsmith? I'll certainly be raising it with him, as I've raised issues of this kind with his predecessor Tony Blair in the past. We're now up to about the fourth round of proposed changes to the immigration system in Britain, which have implications for Kiwis. We've dealt with two rounds on working holidays with some success in protecting New Zealanders' rights. This time, there's two separate consultations, one on the short-term visas and one on the ancestry visa. The ancestry visa consultation period is still ongoing. We will be putting in a submission on that shortly. But on the short-term visas, there's clearly quite significant implications for New Zealanders when tourist and business visas are proposed to be reduced from 6 months to three, and when academic and film crew visas could be brought down from a maximum of 12 months to three. That's a significant curtailing of rights. And we are making the point, as we have in the past on the working holiday scheme arrangements, that New Zealanders pose very little risk at all to British immigration procedures. We are a law-abiding people, we cause very little trouble, and the people who are accessing the short-term visas are generally contributing to the British economy in some way. Well, obviously I'll raise the matter. I would say it's getting tougher because with the expansion of the European Union to 27 nations and many of the new entrants with living standards substantially lower than those in our own country or Britain, many are seeing their future in the more developed parts of Western Europe. And so Britain itself has absorbed many, many hundreds of thousands of people from Eastern and Central Europe and the Baltic states. And this is putting pressure on its whole immigration system, as there's a greater demand for housing and for other kinds of services. So that leads them to look at the whole immigration system. And that's where New Zealand can get caught up in the backwash. Not just New Zealand, but also those from other first world nations like our own, Australia, Canada, United States as well. So we will not be the only ones making submissions, I'm confident, because the nationals of a number of countries are affected as we are.
Would you be less concerned about the Canadian bid for Auckland Airport after their statement today about being satisfied with 24.9% of
I really don't want to comment on a particular proposal. I think people are well aware of the change that was announced after the stock exchanges closed last Monday night. A matter of, obviously, an application has been made under the Overseas Investment Act. There are two ministers charged with looking at that. They haven't yet received a report from officials on it, but they'll make a decision taking into account the new criterion and all the information given to them.
Do you think this is a major concession, though, by the Canadians?
It's not really possible for me to judge from the quick scan of a headline that I've seen.
Can you respond to comments made by Bill English, who believes it's an embarrassment for Dr. Cullen, and it basically that pigeon farming is called the government's bluff.
No, I don't intend to respond to that.
Do you have a view on whether or not the government should buy back New Zealand Rail?
Well, it's fair to say that when the previous owners of the New Zealand railway system got into considerable difficulty and wanted to exit the company, we would like to have taken control of the whole rail system back at that time. We did take control of the track, which should never have been sold, and we would like to have been able to buy back in the services as well, so that we could then offer them for tender on a contestable basis, because one of the issues with rail is that the private company, which has had a monopoly on it ever since privatisation, first the previous owner and now this owner, of course determines how much runs up and down the track and whether it runs at all and how much effort is put into promoting it. Now, we think there are better ways, but of course to purchase the whole service, you have to get a mutually agreeable price, and we haven't been able to reach agreement on that.
How long are you?
Oh, I couldn't say. How long's a piece of string?
Prime Minister, this is
a strategically important infrastructure.
Yes, but it's not particularly affected by anything that's been done with the criteria in recent times, because that links strategic infrastructure with sensitive land, and sensitive land has a particular definition under the Act. In the case of Auckland International Airport, it's a land that abuts the coastline. That's what brings it into that particular category. But rail has huge significance to us in two respects. One, human safety, because if we did not have a rail system, we would have a great deal more heavy transport on our roads. That not only costs us a lot more for road upkeep, but it also poses considerably greater risk to the travelling public and the ordinary motor car. But secondly, it's of huge strategic interest to us because of our interest in sustainability. And if we could be transporting more people and goods by rail, we would be assisted in meeting the sustainability objectives.
If you're concerned about strategic assets, the problem of passing offshore, why do you only bother to regulate about sensitive land? Why not something more extensive?
Well, you'd have to put examples to me of what else is on the blocks. You see, our government hasn't had a practice of putting major infrastructure on the blocks. Sadly, Contact was sold before we became the government, but the rest of the electricity system is basically intact. So we have the rail track, we have clearly 80% plus ownership of the national airline. In a number of the airports, we still have very significant interests. Auckland Airport stands out as an airport where all the shares are able to be traded on the stock exchange, where you can get dominant control by a single owner, and that owner could be a foreign owner with interests different from the strategic interests of New Zealand.
So if the price was right, the government would be interested in buying toll?
Well, that's been pretty clear, yes.
Just on
the
body snatching, have you seen the statement of the Chief Coroner?
No.
He's suggesting that the coroner's actually changed so that all deaths, coroners have the exclusive jurisdiction and right of custody of those bodies, and in the event of a dispute, they could get the directive.
Well, look, I think his idea is well worth looking at. I think it's one of the things that has to be put on the table as we look to whether there is a legal solution around this. Obviously, whatever the law says, you are still going to have some conflict because it arises out of circumstances in particular families. But the law may be able to assist with enforcement powers and making it clearer where legal duty lies.
Prime Minister, there's a report out of London that a closed meeting of the IWC has agreed to let Japan resume commercial whaling on its coastline in exchange for dropping its scientific program. Are you happy with that?
I haven't had any such reports, so I couldn't comment on it. I had heard that the meeting had made some progress around the scientific whaling issue, but I haven't had any report about any proposed return to commercial whaling. There is, under the International Whaling Commission rules a possibility for countries to have small quotas for indigenous whaling, and that happens in the Caribbean. It may happen in Alaska, for all I know. It may happen in parts of Japan, but I certainly haven't had my attention drawn to any suggestion of a trade-off with commercial whaling.
How certain can you be that the guidelines on disconnections are working? I would have thought you'd get a form of the number of disconnections during the summer months anyway. But are you certain that that's a real trend?
Oh, it dropped off very, very sharply with the publicity about the tragedy in Auckland, and then the guidelines came in and kept the downward pressure on it. So I have no doubt that probably even without the guidelines, retailers would have been particularly conscious of needing to give better protection to vulnerable consumers. But the guidelines make it very clear what the expectations are, and I think there has been a good response.
Are you getting information, though, on those people who have been disconnected that proper procedures were followed to ensure that none of them were left vulnerable as a result of the disconnection?
I haven't had any reports of difficulties in that respect. So we are still working through some issues with the health boards, because in the area of someone who's come out of hospital, they may not have life-saving equipment, but they may still be vulnerable. So there's some issues around whether the alert system is working as well as it should there. But overall, we're very heartened that the retailers have responded well to the spirit and the law letter of the new guidelines.
Do we continue monitoring those?
Yes.
It might be that when the memory of that tragedy goes away, that they'll go back to the old sort of method.
Well, that's why you needed the tightened guideline, and that's why we've always held up the prospect of regulation, and that didn't get results. Because certainly we saw an instant response, if you like, to the tragedy in Auckland. But that was then followed with firm guidelines which gave the retailers a better idea of what was expected, and with some teeth behind it. So I think we've made a tremendous amount of progress.
What's wrong with fish on the list of what you consider to be strategic assets?
Well, you're talking in the case of the change last week of strategic infrastructure on sensitive land. Now, you could go through and do an exercise of what is sensitive land under the Act and what assets might fall into that category. That hasn't been done at this point. What is clear is that the new criterion applies to Auckland International Airport and to the bid for a substantial stake in it by a foreign company. And of course, people in this room are financially literate enough to know that you don't need 51% of Auckland Airport to get control. You get control with 25% if the shareholding is widely dispersed, as it is in the case of Auckland International Airport. This is why foreign investment screening kicks in for any application for more than 24.9% of a company, because it is recognised that control can go with what might seem to be a minority share, but is actually a very effective share if there's dispersed shareholding.
Are you ruling out coming up with a list sometime in the future?
I'm not ruling anything in or out. I'm simply saying that the criterion which has been developed is clearly applying to Auckland International Airport and the Canadian Pension Fund's bid for effective control.
Senator Martin Party, Jeff Fox in the weekend to take on
I'm very confident of Parikura Horimiya's prospects. He has run against Derek Fox before. Parikura Horimiya would be the most effective networker I know, not only right across New Zealand, but of course in particular in his own constituency, which stretches from the north of the east coast right down into, I believe, the upper Hutt Stokes Valley area of Wellington. So I believe he's built up a strong following. I know he's got a very big election team behind him, and I'd have complete confidence in him.
Well, Mr. Fox is a candidate.
potential?
Well, Derek Fox has a high profile, and he's put that profile to the test before by running directly against Polycura Horomia. But he's up against someone who's been able to show huge delivery for his constituents. The pioneering agreement on foreshore and seabed is an obvious example. But if you look at what's happened with employment prospects around that whole Ikaroa Rafiti electorate, it's quite phenomenal. You've actually now got the same complaints about shortage of labour in many places in that area that we've seen right across New Zealand. So a tremendous amount has changed for Māoridom in that electorate across the country, and that's why I remain very confident of Parakura Horomia's prospects.